Hey, the Shilling Show continues, and pleased to welcome back to the program. Gosh, David, it feels like just yesterday you were here. It's been a fast month. David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management. Today's topic is getting your finances in order. He's online at muratahonmoney.com. And I just wanted to give an update. Our last conversation was right after the breach of all of that information from one of the credit reporting agencies. And I did follow your advice, and I went online to all three of them and put a freeze on my credit and my wife's credit. On one of them, we ran into a little snafu because they ask you some questions, and one of them was rather nonsensical to me, but I tried to answer the best I could. Apparently, one of the questions was answered wrong, and they said you have to send us in a bunch of documentation. So we did that for one out of the six. The other five went through online, and I'm very glad to have done it. So thank you for the advice.
Yeah, that's great. If anyone's listening and hasn't frozen their credit, they should. The breach means everyone out there has all of your information and can pretend to be you. And if you don't freeze your credit, then you're really just asking for the Equifax breach to result in someone stealing your identity.
And by the way, I think it was you that mentioned while you were here that Clark Howard had something on his website about it. And if it wasn't, I did go there and found the instructions for each one. There was a direct link to it, and it was super easy. So.
Nice.
All right. So today's topic, I want to start out with, and getting your finances in order, how they're in such disorder, which is the lack of financial and economic literacy. I cannot be imagining that, am I?
Yes. Most people don't understand finances very well. It's not something that, unless you've dealt with it your entire life or your parents were always bringing it to your attention, that it really got built into us. There's very few amount of financial literacy. Even the high school classes where they teach finance, they found actually end up resulting in people knowing less about finance than they did before they started the classes. Financial education in high school just doesn't work, partly because abstract education doesn't work no matter what you do. The most important thing is first to have a good role model, which is someone that you're watching and watching how they handle their finances. Most parents keep their finances secret from their children. I was fortunate enough to have parents who, at a very young age, taught me everything I needed to know about finance. At 4 years old, I knew how much everything costs. I knew how much our mortgage was on our house. I used to watch The Price is Right. I knew what everything costs on The Price is Right. I was a whiz. I knew how much my father made. I knew how much it cost for a week's worth of groceries, mostly due to my mom, who would just tell me everything. Mm-hmm. And that's a very rare parent that is brave enough to tell their kids what they make. But she accompanied it by what we needed. And therefore, I didn't think that my parents' stinginess was due to anything other than trying to have enough savings put away in case we needed it for our benefits as well as everyone else's. So I didn't feel entitled, but I also knew everything about my parents' finances. So the first thing you need is a good role model. But the second thing you need is you need experience. And that's what no book or classroom can give you. And you need experience with three different things. You need experience earning, you need experience spending, and you need experience saving and investing. So unless you know how to earn, unless you know how to spend, unless you know how to invest, you're really not going to be financially literate and prepared. And for college graduates today, that is very, very few who know how to do those three things. Maybe they know how to spend a lot, but that's not what I mean by knowing how to spend. They don't know how to comparison shop, and they don't know how to set a budget and stick to it, and they don't know how to determine if something is worth it or not. And they haven't learned the most basic impulse control, which we taught our kids by, you have to wait a week. If you want to buy something, you have mm-hmm. to wait a week. And that was just the rule. No matter what you wanted, you had to wait a week. And if you weren't sure if you still wanted it at the end of the week, you had to wait another week. because money is really the time and effort, it's your life force that you're giving up. And to give it up for something that's an impulse buy and you'll regret it in the next 15 minutes is really not worth it.
This is very interesting. I was talking with a guy recently who owns a local business, and he has a cabin that he rents out. And he was telling me that although he has a website with the cabin and everything, he put it up on Airbnb, and he gets more business, considerably more, coming through Airbnb. And I asked him about this. He said, well, it's really funny because if the millennials, and he was speaking specifically about them because that's who stayed there. He said if they would just do a little bit of research, they could stay for a lot less money by just going directly to my own website. If I go through Airbnb, I have all these other fees, but they just want the one button access. And it goes back to what you said about not being able to comparison shop. And I was thinking, you know, I really try, and maybe it's just a generational thing, but when I'm buying something, I shop really hard to get it for the best price and save money that could be applied towards something else.
I agree 100%. If you have a major purchase or even a minor purchase and you don't shop around and try to get three or four bids, you're really just wasting money. And one way to think about it is if you can save even 5 or 10%, that's 5 or 10% more savings you have. And 5 or 10% of savings builds a tremendous amount of wealth when you save and invest it. So yes, just trying to figure out how to shop more efficiently is amazing. At Murata Wealth Management, we have a weekly staff lunch. And I will say that our weekly staff lunch is quite often gravitates into the best deals in town.
Oh, I love it.
and, you know, we have people who are sharing how they've saved money every week. And one of the best is a cell phone plan such that if there's a wireless, it uses the wireless. So if you're at home or you're at work, mm-hmm. it's using the wireless and every call is free. And only if you're roaming do you have any charges. And then the roaming charges just go and use minutes. So, yes, you have your phone in the car, and that's fine. In an emergency, when you're in the car, you can still use it, and you get charged for the minutes. But other than that, every single phone call you make is free. And just there's just so many different things like that where people are paying, you know, $50 or $100 a month simply to have a cell phone, and yet you can get these cell phone deals that are much better if you stop and look at the technology. And we may get to it later in the show, but it's the regular monthly charges mm-hmm. that are actually the easiest to reduce. Because if you reduce that once, now you've saved $50 every single month, you know, and that adds up to $600 a year. And $600 a year, you know, will result in about $200,000 in your retirement. You know, in just 1 year, and $600 a year over the course of, you know, 20 to 65 will probably result in about $1 million at least in your retirement savings.
That is not chump change.
Nope.
All right. We're coming back on the other side with more David Murata. 977-1070 is the phone number. If you have comments or questions, getting your finances in order. There was a recent statistic we're going to share with you. If people hit a certain dollar amount emergency, they couldn't make it. To me, it was remarkably low, but there's a huge percentage of people. We'll get to all that on the other side and some tips for you as well on how to save money to put it aside. Stay with The Shilling Show. We continue with David Murata, and 977-1070 is the phone number. The Shilling Show continues here on a Tuesday dish of the program. David Murata, our guest. Hey, coming up in hour number two, Jason Bianchi will be with us here from the Albemarle County School Board on the Monticello High School controversy regarding the national anthem. We'll get to all that with Jason Bianchi in hour number two. So we're talking today with David about getting your finances in order. And I saw this astounding number, David, about a percentage of people that couldn't cover what appears to be a relatively minor emergency. What was that, and who are these people?
I don't remember which statistic. I've
okay,
seen a couple.
Well, it was a long time ago. So 63% couldn't cover a $500
yes.
emergency.
Yes, and if it goes up to 1,000, it's even a worse percentage, and if it goes up to 3,000, it's even worse. If people can't cover anything, which is how you get into credit card debt. You get into credit card debt because you're very proud that you spend 100% of what you earn and you don't spend more. And then an emergency happens and you need $500 for a car repair, and then you have to put it on your credit card. And that's how the credit card death spiral starts. What's amazing is people who have credit card debt are paying so much in interest that they could be millionaires if they just saved the interest. Mm. It's not like it's going to cost them any more, but because they can't live within their means, they can't save because they're constantly paying off credit card debt. And I think the statistic is it's somewhere between 10,000 and 16,000 for people who are in credit card debt is how much credit card debt they have. And just pretend it's just 10,000. Mm-hmm. The interest on 10,000 is like 18%. So now you're talking about $1,800 every year that they can't seem to save. And if they could save that, they'd be millionaires by the time they were done. So living in credit card debt is the very first thing that you have to solve to get your finances in order. And we talked a little bit about that last time. Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace is a great way of getting out of credit card debt. I will say I've tried to help numerous people get out of credit card debt. I now have a long list of things they have to promise that they're willing to do, mm-hmm. because otherwise I know it's hopeless. And unless they're willing to go through all of those things and do them, I know that the behavior change won't happen. And the behavior change that needs to happen for getting out of credit card debt is radical. It's like an AA meeting. You have to just do it, and you have to really take it as a serious effect. One of Dave Ramsey's films I love, it's got a gazelle running from a cheetah. Mm-hmm. And he said, "How many times have you ever seen a gazelle running from a cheetah make it?"
Never.
Not very frequently. And he's got this long chase between the gazelle mm-hmm. and the cheetah. And he says, well, you need to think of credit card debt. And you need to think, say, when you pull out your credit card, you need to put it back in your wallet and yell cheetah. Because you're going to get eaten. And he's got this long video, and he goes through the whole thing. And at the end, he says, this is the only video of a gazelle ever getting away.
Wow.
So you really need to take credit card debt seriously, and whatever you can do to get out of credit card debt. Most of our financial wisdom comes after you've gotten out of credit card debt, because it's very hard to do that. It almost takes a counselor who's with you constantly saying, no, you can't do that. You'd have to take drastic measures.
How about never getting into it in the first place? I mean, I know people need to hopefully learn how to use them. But what do you suggest for a young person who's just starting out and has the opportunity to get a credit card?
Yeah, so there are a lot of advantages of getting a credit card. Mm-hmm. You can get rewards, and you can get all of your finances to roll into your budget automatically. But if you're not keeping a budget, a credit card is very dangerous, because studies have found that people with a credit card will spend 2.5 times what people without a credit card will spend if you had cash in your wallet. So I've known a few people who've used cash in the wallet as a technique. It's very good. You get the cash that you want to spend. You put it in various wallets, various envelopes. And when you go to the grocery store, you take the grocery store envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the month, all the extra cash gets put away. So if you didn't spend it that month, it goes into savings. And now you get your next paycheck, and you put it back into the envelopes. An envelope method is actually very good. My wife and I kept a budget when we were first married in a three-ring spiral notebook. And we would just have one page per category. And at the beginning of the month, we'd have a meeting, and we'd put $15 in his clothes, and I'd put $15 down, and I'd add it to the $15 I hadn't used from the month before. Now I've got $30, mm-hmm. and I'd know that I could only spend that. And if I went and got something and it was $45, I'd put -$45. Now I've got -$15. I can't buy anything for a while, and I'd remember that until next month when I zeroed it out. And then the month next month I would go and I'd have $15 again. So any kind of budget does a number of things. The very first and most important thing is it makes you aware of spending. The best diet is you have to write down everything that you eat and the number, and you have to look up the number of calories it is. That makes eating such a pain in the neck that you don't do it as frequently. And the same thing's true of spending. If you have to write down in a notebook every single thing that you spend, that makes you less likely to spend it. So if you think, well, budgeting is too much of a pain for me to do it, that's actually the right model, is to have it be a pain, because now you're aware of your spending, and now you're making note of it, and it makes spending less easy to do and less mindless to do. Most people get into budget trouble because of mindless spending. The other one is if you're married and you've got a dollar limit that neither of you can spend unless you've talked to the other. So I can't spend this until I've talked to the other person. Or at the end of the day, you have to share with your partner all the stupid things you spent money on.
Okay.
Any kind of accountability like mm-hmm. that will help you, just like accountability and having a friend go to the gym will help you. So, yeah, staying out of debt is not a simple thing. It's a mindset thing, and it takes at least 28 days to change a mindset. So you have to be practicing this religiously for 28 days. If you practice it for 3 to 6 months, then you'll have started to build it into habits.
You know, 28 days in the scheme of things is really a very short period of time. If people can actually get past that and start developing these habits, it seems like that's really accessible to most people.
Yeah. And that's what something like Financial Peace, where you have to go every week and you have to talk about your finances and your debt. That's what it begins to do, is it begins to help change those mindsets. So that's so be and stay debt free is really the very first financial resolution you should ever make for yourself. And you really need to sort of make it now. A lot of people don't understand that there's a financial life cycle. You start out in life, you're single, and you have an opportunity to save because your budget is probably the lowest it will ever be in your life. A lot of people think, I'm just starting out in a job, I can't save. If you can't save then, you'll never save. So you have to start right when you're young. And they're proud that they're spending 100%, that they're not in credit card debt, but really they should be saving at least 15% and probably more because it's one of the few times in your life in the financial life cycle. Then you get married, now you've got another person in your finances, and your spending actually can go up from there because now you've got another person, and who knows how responsible they've been. They may be in credit card debt when they marry you, and so now what are you going to do? How are you going to get out of that? Now you've got to start working out together how you're going to value and spend. Kids is the worst period because when you have kids, you spend a lot of money, and it's actually the time when a lot of families start deficit spending, and you have kids for at least 18 years, so it's a long time. And then post-kids, you've got one last chance to save before you need to go into retirement. But you don't have very long to save, so your investments don't have very long to grow. Mm-hmm. And so, for every dollar you save in your 20s, that's worth $100 in your retirement. But for every dollar you save post-kids, it's not worth that much. And so it's more difficult. So if I were to say something, I would say the time to save is now when you're single. And now when you're double income, no kids, and definitely now when you've got kids, and you've got one last chance. So now is the right time for everyone I'm talking to on the radio to be saving. And for every 7 years that they delay starting to save, they probably cut their retirement in half. So it's so urgent for them to get their finances together now, not wait until the end of the year, not wait till after Thanksgiving, not wait until they're grown up. Now's really the time. And we found that people tell themselves financial lies. So they say, I'll get my finances in order as soon as fill in the blank. Now that I look at my finances, I can't begin to save because fill in the blank. Or I can't save and invest until or unless something else happens. And there's always an excuse for why you can't save. And yet this is the moment that we're living in. This is the only moment to save. It's very difficult to start saving in the future because the future becomes the present, and then you've got your excuses.
Let's go to a break. The final segment with David Morata. We've got a question from a listener via email, and the phone lines are open. 977-1070 is the phone number. We're talking about getting your finances in order, and we'll be back with our final segment with David Morata in just a moment. The Shilling Show heading into our final segment for this hour with David Morata, 977-1070, getting your finances in order. So going to the email box, robs@wina.com. Michael says, can you ask the guest how's the best way to establish credit without a credit card? So is that possible? And if so, how would you do it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the first thing I should say is Dave Ramsey will say forget having a credit score. Just don't never have a credit card. And then he says, what do you need a credit score for? You need a credit score for buying a house and then find a lender who will do manual underwriting. So the manual underwriting is the way it used to be. You get to know the person, you actually meet them, you talk to them, you interview them, you find out all the information, and you do manual underwriting without a credit score. Not having a credit score is actually a very positive thing in my analysis. So the fact that you don't have a credit score can actually, I think, help if you do manual underwriting. Having said that, the way you get a credit score is to have things that you're regularly making payments on. Do this. Get a credit card, sure, and just use it in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And that'll get you a credit score because you'll pay it off every month, and that'll be fine. Or something along that. If you ever have a home mortgage, you have a credit score, and then you're just fine. So once you get your first house, that's the only reason you need a credit score. And then if you have a house and you're making that large payment every month, you have a great credit score. And so long as you've always made your house payments and you've never gotten behind, you'll have a pretty good credit score. People who have bad credit scores, it's because they just don't pay their bills. And so long as you're paying your bills, you'll have a great credit score. So
you mentioned the lack of need for a lot of people to even have a credit score at all. But what about things like auto insurance and other sorts of things that actually rate your pricing based on your credit, which I'm delighted because I've worked very hard to maintain a really excellent credit score over my life. So I'm happy about that. But if you don't have a credit score, how do those agencies treat you?
Yeah, it's and that's why it's probably good to go ahead and have a credit score. The credit bureaus, you know, are terrible entities because the people that they're working for are not you and I.
Mm-hmm.
They have no incentive to work for you and I. You and I don't pay them, and yet they have our credit scores, you know, by the scruff of the neck, and they're the keepers of our good name, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no incentive to actually have any customer service. They even have no incentive to keep our stuff safe, because once Equifax has a breach, then now what are they going to do? They give you a 1 year free, and then everyone's going to say, well, now I need credit monitoring my entire life, so I'm going to sign up for your service. You know, why would you ever trust the people who breached your information in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they should be liable for millions, maybe even trillions of dollars in terms of the damage that they've done to the American populace. So yes, get a credit card, use it only in the grocery store, pay it off every week, and you'll do just fine in terms of having a credit score. In fact, maybe the less amount of things that you flow through your credit cards, the better, because that way you won't ever miss a payment and you'll always have money to pay them.
I think a lot of people look at all of this, the people who don't have $500 for an emergency. And you know, there are some people who are legitimately in a very disastrous financial position, but there are other people who just aren't responsible like that. But they look and they say, well, gosh, if I get into trouble, the government will take care of me. I can declare bankruptcy. I could go on Section 8. I could apply for food stamps or get one of the independence cards up in Maryland that will make me independent because the government's paying all my bills. So what do we say to people like that? Because I really think that is becoming a more predominant mentality in America today, is why should I worry about it?
Yeah, the problem with leftist thinking is that it doesn't take any responsibility for anything. The biggest thing I would say is that actions have consequences, and the definition of wealth management is that very small changes over long periods of time can have huge effects. Literally, the difference between being a millionaire and not being a millionaire is only a few dollars every week, and you could save, invest, and you could be a millionaire, or you could not save and invest, and you could be living off your Social Security your entire life. So that's the difficulty is what is your locus of control. And generally speaking, if you have an internal locus of control, that is, things are in my own power and I can change them, you will grow rich and do well in life because you will take the actions necessary, and actions have consequences. On the other hand, if you have an external locus of control, that everything is out there and what we really need to do is to solve society somehow, you won't be part of the solution, you'll be part of the problem. And that's just disastrous. The other piece that helps is to have a future-oriented thinking, and that is that you're actually not just in the moment and pleasing yourself in the moment. I've actually known a lot of people who are very proud of the fact, well, you know, I don't save and invest anything because, you know, that's just trying to, you know, stockpile your riches in this life, and that's a terrible thing to do. And I turn around and I say, so let me get this face straight. You know, according to your faith, the best thing to do is to spend every dime you make on yourself today. And it's just like, that is not responsible. You will have no excess in case someone in need comes along. You will not be able to give them anything. You'll have nothing to offer them, and you won't even be able to take care of yourself. You're just going to throw yourself on the burden of society. So I think it's good to gradually grow rich, because when you are rich, you can help other people. And when you are rich, you can start businesses, which help our economy. And there's really, in my mind, there's very few things that rich people can do which have harm on other people. Even if the rich people take all of their riches and they put it in a swimming pool and burn them, mm-hmm. all that does is increase the money or decrease the money supply, and it makes all of our dollars more scarce, and it makes everyone else richer as a result of having less money in the money supply. So it actually enriches society equally if they just burn their cash. There's really nothing that rich people – I mean, I'm saying that facetiously. I'm sure there are things that you could do. You could put out a hit on someone, but I'm sure there are things you could do that are bad. But most of the things that rich people do with their money – employ other people, employ businesses, save and invest, make investments in the economy, free up capital for other people's uses – and all of those things are good. The definition of capital is deferred consumption, and the opposite of capital is consuming everything that you make, and that's just not good. That's not a healthy thing to do.
It certainly isn't. David Morata, it's been a very instructive hour, and I hope people were taking notes. If they want to visit you online, they can do so at moradaonmoney.com, and I know there you've got a lot of great articles archived about these issues and many others. So thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll look forward to next time.
Thank you very much.